Barnaby Jones parked his rented buggy in Cortez. His drive down from Denver was brutal. He was sure he almost froze to death. But for three bottles of imported French sherry, he wouldn't have made it through the wilderness in a blizzard. He stopped in front of the sheriff's office and took a wool blanket off his lap before he climbed down from the seat. He removed his gloves. Cortez was a mere spot in the road. A dot on the map he bought in Denver after he got off the train.
The things I do to get a story.
He wondered if his editor at Harper's Magazine would appreciate his troubles.
Oh, yes.
Barnaby Jones entered the sheriff's door without knocking, enjoying the warmth from a cast iron stove in a corner of the tiny room. A jail cell sat at the back of the place. A man with a gray handlebar mustache looked up at him with a question on his face. He was seated at a battered roll-top desk with a newspaper in his lap.
Sheriff Jim Sykes.
That's me.
The lawman looked him up and down.
Stranger, you ain't dressed for this climate. Didn't anybody tell you it gets cold in Colorado territory?
Yes, sirree, they did.
Barnaby offered his hand.
I am Barnaby Jones from Harper's Magazine in New York. I'm wearing long underwear under my suit.
What brings you to Cortez?
The United States Marshal in Denver told me to look you up. I'm writing a story for my magazine about a retired gunfighter named Frank Morgan, and Marshal Williams said you would know if he's in this part of the country. One of our competitors, the Boston Globe, has sent a reporter out here to interview this Mr. Morgan. I'd like to talk to Morgan myself.
He ain't in these parts, mister. Marshal Williams was wrong about that. If Morgan was around, I'd know about it. I'd have dead men stacked up here like cord wood.
Barnaby edged over to the stove, warming his backside as best he could.
I have other information. A writer by the name of Lewis Pettigrew from the Globe found out that Morgan is in southwestern Colorado. I'm only a day or two behind, Mr. Pettigrew.
You're both wrong.
How can you be so sure, Sheriff?
Like I said, no dead bodies. Maybe you ought to have the wax cleaned out of your ears. I said it real plain the first time.
Well, I know he's somewhere close by. Pettigrew left the day before I did. He rented a horse in Denver and came down here. Something about Morgan's son being a prisoner of some outlaw gang.
We got a few outlaws. Some of them are in town right now. Victor Van Bergen and his bunch of toughs are down at the wagon wheel. But they haven't caused any trouble. I think they're just passing through.
I never heard of Victor Van Bergen. Who's he?
A bank robber, thief, and a killer. But so long as he don't cause no trouble in my town, I'm leaving him and his boys alone.
Barnaby reached inside his heavy wool coat, taking out a few papers.
Who is Ned Pine?
A hired gun. Worse than Van Bergen. He heads up one of the old outlaw gangs in this part of the West, but last time I heard of him, he was down south. Texas, I think.
Well, Mr. Pettigrew of the Boston Globe believes he's here, and that he has Frank Morgan's son as a hostage.
It's news to me. I'd have had something over the telegraph wire by now if Ned Pine and his men were close by.
I still think I have good information about Pine and Morgan.
Sykes went back to reading his paper.
You're welcome to look around, but Morgan ain't here, and neither is Pine. Van Bergen just showed up today. I judge he'll be gone by tomorrow if this snow lets up.
Where can I hire a room for the night? And I need a place to stable my buggy horse.
Ain't but one hotel in town, the Cortez Hotel. It's just down the street. You can't miss it.
Have I come too late to buy dinner?
Mary, over at the cafe, might have some stew left. She's about to close, so I'd hurry if I was you.
Thank you, Sheriff. I'm thankful for the information you gave me.
You're wasting your time in Cortez looking for Ned Pine or Frank Morgan. We don't get many of the real bad hard cases in this town. They usually pass right on through if the weather's decent.
Barnaby put on his hat and walked out the door. The wind picked up after sundown. Bits of ice and snow stung Jones' cheeks as he climbed back in his snow-covered buggy. Frank sat his horse, watching Ned Pine and his men ride across a snow-covered valley.
He's got those two men covering the back trail.
The snow is mighty heavy, Morgan! If we ride around them and cut off those two gunslingers, we can put them in the ground!
They're keeping about a quarter mile between them and Ned. This snow keeps up. Ned won't notice if I jump in front of them and have them toss down their guns.
What? You ain't gonna kill them?
Not unless they don't give me a choice.
Well, what the hell are you gonna do? Tie the both of them to a tree?
I'll show you if they allow it. Follow me and we'll cut them off.
Rich Barnes shivered, nursing a pint of whiskey in the icy wind.
To hell with this, Cabot. We're not making a dime messing around with Frank Morgan's kid. I say we cut out of here and head south.
Ned would follow us and kill us!
Cabot Bulwar covered his mouth with a woolen shawl.
This is a personal thing for Ned.
I'm freezing to death.
No, oh, so am I. I'm from Baton Rouge. I'm not used to this cold, mon ami.
To hell with it, then. With Ned and Lyle and Slade and Billy right over that next ridge. Let's get the hell out of here.
I am afraid of Ned. I do not want to die out here in this snow.
Rich stood up suddenly in his stirrups and pulled his sorrel to a halt.
Who the hell is that with the rifle pointing straight at us?
There are two of them. There's another one on foot standing behind that tree. He also has a rifle aimed at us.
Damn.
Rich ready to open his coat and reach for his pistol.
Climb down, boys. Keep your hands up where I can see them.
Morgan!
Cabot followed the instructions.
Step away from your horses.
Take your pistols out and toss them down!
Rich threw his Colt 44 into the snow. Cabot opened his Mackinac carefully and dropped his Smith & Wesson 45 near his feet.
Get their horses and guns. I'll keep them covered.
An old man in a coonskin cap came toward them carrying a large bore rifle. He picked up their pistols and took their horses' reins, leading them off the trail.
All right, boys, I got one more thing for you to do.
What the hell is that, mister?
Sit down right where you are and pull off your boots.
What?
Pull off your damn boots.
But our feet'll freeze! We'll get the frostbite!
Would you rather be dead?
No.
Cabot sat down in the snow to pull off his boots.
We'll die out here with no boots. We can't make it in our stocking feet.
I can shoot you now. That way your feet won't be cold.
Rich slumped to his rump and pulled off his stovepipe boots without further complaint.
Now start walking. I don't give a damn which direction you go.
We will die!
The lanky gunman came toward them and picked up their boots without taking his rifle sights off them.
Life ain't no easy proposition, gentlemen. Start walking. I'll kill you right where you sit.
Darkness came to the snow-clad mountains. Rich Boggs was hobbling toward the cabin at Lost Pine Canyon on seriously frostbitten feet. Cabot Bulwar was behind him, using a pine limb for a crutch.
It ain't much farther. I can see the mouth of the canyon from here.
Sucker!
Cabot was limping with most of his weight on the crutch.
I'll be gon' kill that bastard Morgan if I get my hands on a horse and a gun.
I just wanna get my feet warm. The way I feel now, I ain't interested in killing nobody. I think a couple of my toes fell off.
Who was the old man with Monsieur Morgan? I hear Ned say Morgan works alone always.
I don't know. Just some old son of a bitch in a coonskin cap with a rifle.
He'd be dangerous, too. In his eyes, I see the look.
You're too goddamn superstitious, Cabot. He'll die just like any other man if you shoot him in the right place. I can guarantee it.
My feet are frozen. I go back to Baton Rouge when a horse I can find. This place I don't like.
I ain't all that fond of it either, Cabot. It was a big mistake to side with Ned on this thing. I never did see how he was gonna make any money.
Money I do not care about now. My feet! All I want is a stove where I can warm them.
Won't be but another half mile of the cabin. All we gotta do is get there before our feet freeze off. Boots and horses are what we need. If they didn't leave our horses in the corral, we're a couple of dead men in this weather.
Dead I feel now. Feeling I don't got at all in either one of my feet.
As night blanketed the canyon, Rich added more wood to the stove. A broken window let in so much cold air, Rich was still shivering. He took the boots off Don Jones' body and forced his feet into them. Cabot was wearing boots and an extra pair of socks that once belonged to Mac. They found two pistols and a small amount of ammunition among the dead men. Ned and the others had taken all the food. Thus, Rich was boiling fistfuls of snow in an old coffee pot full of yesterday's grounds. Five horses remained in the corral, even though the gate was open. They were nibbling from the stack of hay. There were enough saddles to go around.
South I will go in the morning.
Cabot held his palms open near the stove.
Me too. I'm finished with Ned and his bunch of bullshit over getting even Frank Morgan. There's no payday in it for us.
All afternoon, dream I have of a bowl of hot crawfish gumbo and hush puppies. Here I do not belong.
Me either. I'm headed down to Mexico where it's warm all the time.
Cabot turned to the broken window where Don got shot in the face.
What was that noise?
I didn't hear no noise.
One of the horses in the corral. It snorted or made some kind of sound.
My ears are so damn cold I couldn't hear a thing nohow. Maybe it was just your imagination. All I hear is snow falling on this roof.
Then Cabot heard it again.
That sounded like Jerry's voice.
Cabot hobbled to his feet with a pistol in his fist.
I heard it that time.
Rich got up with Mac's gun to open the door a crack. Rich saw a sight he would remember for the rest of his life. Jerry Page came crawling toward them on his hands and knees in the snow, leaving a trail of blood behind him. Rich and Cabot rushed outside to help him.
Morgan came up on the rim and stuck a knife in me. He killed Roger. Cut his throat with the same goddamn Bowie knife.
We'll take you in by the fire.
I'm froze stiff. I bleed real bad. You gotta get me a doctor real quick.
We can't go nowhere in this snowstorm.
Rich and Cabot helped the wounded man into the cabin.
For morning, we will have to wait.
I'm dying. You gotta help me. Where's Ned?
Ned and the others pulled out. We ran into Morgan, too. He took our boots, guns, and horses. We damn near froze to death getting back here.
They placed Jerry on a blanket beside the stove and covered him with a moth-eaten patchwork quilt.
Morgan. Morgan, he ain't human. He's like a mountain lion. Me and Roger never heard a thing until he was on top of us.
We figured there was trouble when neither one of you came back. Morgan killed most of the others. Only Lyle, Slade, Billy, and Ned made it out of here alive.
What happened to Morgan's kid?
Ned had a gun to his head.
There's only one way he's gonna stop.
Jerry put a hand over the deep knife wound between his ribs.
Ned's gotta let that boy go.
Ned's gone crazy for revenge. Until he kills Morgan, he won't stop.
Morgan will kill him first. Goddamn, I need a drink of whiskey. Anything.
We're boiling old coffee grounds.
Whiskey there ain't none. Ned and the others took it all with them when we pulled out of here.
Cabot poured a cup of weak coffee for Jerry, steam rising from a rusted tin cup.
Oh, I want to die way up here. Colorado.
Jerry closed his eyes.
I sure as hell wish I was home. Well, I could see my mama one more time.
Jerry's chest stopped moving.
Don't waste that coffee. Jerry's on his way back home now.
Cabot stared into the cup.
Coffee, this is not mon ami. It is warm water only. A little color in it.
Ned paced back and forth as a fire burned under a rocky ledge in the bend of a dry stream bed.
Where the hell are Rich and Cabot?
He glanced once at Conrad. bound hand and foot beneath the outcrop where the fire flickered. It was dark and still snowing, though the snowfall had let up some.
They ain't coming.
What the hell do you mean they ain't coming?
Morgan got to them.
Slade called out from his lookout point on top of the ledge.
They'd have been here by now if they were able.
Slade's right.
Billy chimed in with his Winchester resting on his shoulder.
Somewhere or other, Frank Morgan slipped up behind him and got them both.
Bullshit! Morgan is an old man, a has-been in the gunman's trade. He doesn't have it in him to slip up behind Rich and Cabot.
I figure he got Jerry and Roger. You know he shot all those others back at the cabin. And you've got to wonder what happened to Sam and Buster and Tony back on the trail when they went to check on Charlie.
Morgan must be slick.
Lyle cast a wary glance around their camp.
I wish we'd never gotten into this mess. That kid over yonder ain't worth no $1 million to nobody.
He ain't worth a nickel to me.
Billy Miller added wood to the fire.
I say we kill the little bastard and get clear of this cold country.
Ned turned on his men.
We're not leaving until Frank Morgan is dead.
Lyle gave Ned a look.
Who's gonna kill him, Ned? We ain't had much luck trying it so far.
We'll join up with Victor at Gypsum Gap and hunt him down like a dog.
Being outnumbered don't seem to bother Morgan all that much.
Are you taking Morgan's side?
I'm not taking any side but my own. My main purpose now is to stay alive.
Me too.
Same goes for me. This Morgan feller is more than a handful.
Are you boys yellow?
Nope, just smart. If a man is a manhunter by profession, he's usually mighty damn good at it if he lives very long.
I never met a man who didn't make a mistake.
Ned crossed back to the fire to warm his hands.
So far, Morgan hasn't made very many.
One of you saddle a horse and ride back down the trail to see if you can find Rich and Cabot.
I'm not going. That's exactly what a man like Morgan will want us to do.
What the hell do you mean?
He wants us to split up so he can take us down a few at a time.
Slade's right.
We ought to stay together. At least until we join up with Vic and his boys.
Morgan! That son of a bitch is a dead man when I get him in my sights.
Billy glanced around at forest shadows.
He'll come after us tonight. He's liable to kill us in our bedrolls if we ain't careful.
I'm not gonna sleep tonight.
Why's that?
I wanna make damn sure I see the sun come up tomorrow morning.
Damn right.
Ned was fuming now. Even his two best gunmen, Lyle and Slade, showed signs of fear.
You ride back a ways, Billy. Just a mile or two.
I won't do it, Ned.
Are you disobeying a direct order from me?
Ned opened his coat.
Yes, sir, I am. If Morgan's back there, he'll kill me from ambush.
Ned snaked his Colt from a holster. He aimed for Billy's stomach.
Get on one of those horses and ride southwest to see if you can find Rich and Cabot. If you don't, I'll kill you myself.
Billy Miller's eyes rounded.
You'd shoot me down for not going back?
I damn sure will. Get mounted.
Billy backed away from the fire with his palms spread wide.
You let this Morgan fella get stuck in your craw, Ned. I ain't never seen you like this.
Get on that goddamn horse. See if you can find their tracks.
Billy turned his back on Ned and trudged off to the picket ropes.
You may have just gotten that boy killed.
Billy hunched his shoulders into the wind, buttoning his coat underneath his chin. He wore thin leather gloves that did little to keep out the cold.
Ned's trying to get me killed.
He gripped the Winchester resting across the pommel of his saddle as the brown gelding clotted into sheets of tiny snowflakes. Billy knew Lyle and Slade were too smart to ride their back trail in the dark with Frank Morgan behind them. So much snow had fallen since they made camp under the rock ledge, Billy couldn't find the tracks they had made, much less those of Rich and Cabot, or Frank Morgan's.
He'll shoot me right out of the saddle.
Billy searched both sides of a narrow mining road leading west, flanked by tall pines. They had ridden this stretch in daylight. Now it was pitch dark, a condition made worse by the snow.
I'm a dead man.
But he was just as dead if Ned Pine shot him for refusing to look for Rich and Cabot. His gelding pricked up its ears, watching something ahead of him on the trail.
It's Morgan.
Billy pulled back on the reins to study the situation.
Don't nothing hurt no worse than being shot when it's cold.
A bounty hunter put a bullet through his leg one winter as Billy was leaving Amarillo with 20 head of stolen cows, and nothing, not even his dad's woodshed whippings when he was a kid, hurt any worse. Billy reined his horse off the road into the ponderosa pines and waited.
Just one of them. His horse caught our scent because we's upwind.
Frank jacked a shell into the firing chamber of his Winchester.
I'll go after him on foot. Keep an eye out in case the rest of them are close by.
And Martha would tell me if they get round behind us.
Frank crept off into the darkness, making a wide sweep to get behind the rider they'd seen.
Whew. Damn, he's a warrior. What he needs is a really good mountain mule.
Billy swung down from the saddle and tied his horse off to a pine limb.
I'll just sit here and wait for half an hour. Ed won't know the difference if I tell him I couldn't find any tracks.
He hunkered down behind a ponderosa trunk to be out of the wind, cradling his Winchester next to his chest while he searched the black forest around him, his teeth chattering.
I'm gonna quit this outfit.
He thought about home and being warm.
I can kill you now.
Who's there?
Billy quickly raised the muzzle of the Winchester.
Lay that Winchester down, or I'll put a tunnel through your head.
You, Morgan?
That's right.
How did you get behind me?
Quietly.
Ain't nobody can be that quiet.
I only tell you one more time to drop that rifle.
Billy let the Winchester slide from his hands into the snow at his feet.
That's better. Where's Ned and my son?
East. Maybe 2 miles. Please don't kill me, Mr. Morgan. I didn't want no part of this right from the start. It was Ned's idea. He's taking your boy up to Gypsum Gap to meet up with Vic Van Bergen.
I can't leave you alive. You'll go back and join forces with Ned Pine again.
No, sir. I won't. I swear it.
Only one way to be sure.
You're gonna kill me?
Take your pistol out of the holster and throw it as far as you can in the direction of my voice.
Yes, sir.
Billy reached into his coat very slowly to take out his Colt 44. He tossed it toward the voice.
Now take off your boots.
My boots?
What I said. Pull them off.
My feet are gonna freeze off.
Would you rather be dead?
No, sir.
Then take them off.
I got holes in my socks. My big toe's sticking through the left one.
You can hop back to camp on your right foot. Pull the boots off.
Billy reached for his right boot.
Are you gonna leave me my horse?
Hadn't planned on it.
But I'll freeze to death.
I'll kill you right now. That won't be a worry. That what you want?
No, sir. I'm taking my boots off now. Just please don't shoot me. I told you the truth. Ned's headed for Gypsum Gap to join up with Vic.
Louis Pettigrew set off before dawn to ride for Denver. He had no story to write. Perhaps Frank Morgan wasn't the legend people thought he was. Pettigrew's ride back to Denver would take 2 days. In a snowstorm like this, he would suffer, unless he could find food and lodging. He carried strips of jerky and tins of peaches in his saddlebags and a bottle of whiskey.
What a waste.
Lewis snuggled inside his coat with a wool muffler wrapped around his face. He couldn't feel his nose. If time allowed, he would stop off in Abilene, Kansas to inquire as to the whereabouts of Wyatt Earp. Word was he moved south to Tucson, leaving Lewis with no one to write about. It was odd about Morgan. So many lawmen said Frank Morgan was the last of the true gunfighters roaming the West.
How so many people could be wrong.
He guided his horse down an empty, snow-covered stretch of road. The road would take him to Denver, if he didn't freeze to death.
Things a writer will do for a story.
It would be a couple of hours until dawn brought warmer weather. His road would pass through a place called Gypsum Gap, an abandoned mining town north of Cortez that once was a big gold mining area. Vic sat up in bed. He reached for the washstand beside his bed and checked his pocket watch for the hour.
5 o'clock.
Tossing aside the quilts on his bed at the Cortez Hotel, he pulled on his trousers.
Time we got saddled and headed back to the Gap.
He dressed quickly, but the tiny room had no heat and he was cold. When he was fully attired, he walked into the hallway and knocked on Ford Peters' door.
Who is it?
Vic, get the rest of the boys up.
What the hell time is it?
Time for you to get your ass out of bed. It's past 5 in the morning. We gotta get the hell out of here before Ned shows up at the Gap with that boy.
Oh, it's too damn early!
Get out of bed! Get the men on their horses and meet me in front of the hotel!
Damn!
Larry and Ashford rode out front. Larry complained about the hour, the cold, the snow covering him and his horse. He turned to Ashford as he urged his pinto forward.
It's still snowing.
You got real good eyes.
Ashford steered his horse around a deep snowdrift.
I'm real damn glad here you don't need spectacles.
Byrne rode up beside them.
Boss don't like all this complaining. He threatened to kill Todd a minute ago on account of Todd said his feet was cold. I'd be real careful about the complaints.
I've got a splitting headache.
Kirk Stearman's face was pale white.
Too much whiskey last night, Stearman. You should have gone to bed early.
What the hell are we doing up here? This don't make no sense to me.
Following orders.
But how the hell are we gonna make any money off this kid Ned Pine got?
Ask Vic. It's a question that Mikey just shot up your horse before daylight.
It just don't make no sense.
Ford glanced up at the clouds, heavy with more snow.
When you join a gang, you don't ask questions if things don't seem to make sense. You follow orders.
Has anybody got any whiskey? I need me a hair of the dog to cure what ails me.
I drank all mine.
Me too, but I sure as hell wish I'd saved a swallow or two.
Steve Bandis overheard the talk as he tried to keep his dun gelding moving in the right direction.
Whiskey is what we all need.
Tyler Fagan, a gunman from Eastern Texas, was about full up with the weather and the job.
What we need is to get the hell back to where it's warm. It's colder than hell up at that old mining town in Gypsum Gap. The goddamn wind blows through every crack in that mining office.
Shut up, Tyler. Vic's liable to be listening to every word you say.
Right now, I don't give a damn. I never heard of this Frank Morgan. We ain't gonna split up no $1 million for helping Ned capture his boy.
You gonna brace Vic with it?
Ford gave Tyler a stare.
Speak up loud, Tyler. Are you gonna jump Ned and Vic over it?
Nope. I aims to stay alive.
Now you're using your brain. You ain't no match for Ned or Vic.
Tyler glanced over his shoulder.
One of us could slip up behind Vic and blow his goddamn head off. That way we could get out of this cold weather and head south.
You try it.
Byrne nodded his agreement.
Yeah, Tyler. You ride up back of him and pull the trigger.
Tyler fell silent as the string of outlaws rode up a steepening trail into the mountains east of Cortez.
Oh, whiskey. All I need is a couple of swallers of whiskey.
The road made a bend. Ford Peters was riding out in front now.
Frank Morgan. I've never been so sick of hearing one man's name in my life.
He's bad news.
How can things be much worse than riding through a goddamn blizzard at 6 o'clock in the morning?
I should have taken that job at the post office down in Goliad.
Skies turned gray to the east. Victor Van Bergen kept his gunmen moving toward Gypsum Gap in spite of the cold and snow, figuring Ned Pine held something big up his sleeve. Just as dawn lightened the sky, Slade tensed on his perch on top of the ledge. He saw a man on foot limping toward them through the deep snowdrifts.
I think we're about to find out what happened to Billy. And don't appear Cabot and Rich are with him.
Do you see Billy?
Billy ain't got no horse. If it's Billy.
No horse.
Seems like Mr. Frank Morgan found Billy before Billy found Rich and Cabot. Or where Morgan left their bodies.
This Morgan feller must be mighty good at stalking a man. Even if he's older than dirt like you say, Ned.
Son of a bitch.
Don't shoot!
That's Billy.
Billy Miller hobbled into camp with a slightly dazed look on his face. He was staggering, about to fall as he made his way toward the fire.
Where the hell's your boots?
Where's your horse?
Morgan got him. He's right behind us. I gotta warm my feet at that fire while I tell y'all about it. I can't feel my own damn feet. They froze.
Billy stumbled toward the fire below the outcrop and fell down on his rump, placing his stocking feet close to the flames for a moment.
How the hell did Morgan get the jump on you?
I was riding down a back trail. I stopped to look at some hoof prints. Morgan was hiding in the dark off to one side of the road. He told me to throw down my guns or he'd kill me.
You gave up without a fight.
He had me cold, boss. Wasn't anything else I could do right then.
What did he say?
He wanted to know about his boy and where we was taking him.
Did you tell Morgan we were headed up to Gypsum Gap?
I only said we was riding north. He said he knew that already.
You're a damn fool and a yellow son of a bitch. I won't have a man like you riding in my gang.
Billy stared into the muzzle of Ned's Colt.
You ain't gonna shoot me, are you?
Oh, don't do it, Ned. We may need every man we got.
Ned tightened his square jaw.
Morgan's liable to hear the gunshot.
I don't give a damn. This idiot already told Morgan where we are.
Billy slammed to the ground with a dark hole near his right temple. Blood squirted from the wound, covering the snow around his head. Conrad couldn't bear the sight.
Billy won't be needing no boots now. No horse, neither.
He deserved it.
Ned lowered his smoking Colt to his side.
He was nothing but a yellow bastard in the first place.
Slade looked back to the south.
Best we get our horses saddled and clear out of here. Morgan will be coming after he heard that gun.
Are you scared of him, too?
I never met a man I was truly scared of. I've damn sure been in some places where I shouldn't have been, where I was at a big disadvantage. This creek is one of them, and I figure it's smart to get to a spot where we can defend ourselves.
Why don't you shut that kid up? Knock him out or something.
I'll do it. We'll have to tie him over his horse.
It don't make a damn bit of difference to me. Get our horses ready. We're clearing out of here for Gypsum Gap.
Suits the hell out of me. Never been so damn cold in my life.
Ned gave their back trail a look.
You bastard, Morgan.
He bolstered his pistol. In a matter of minutes, with Conrad tied over his saddle, they moved out. Billy Miller lay dead by the smoldering remains of their campfire.
Three of them. They got Conrad roped to a horse.
Could be dead as a fence post.
Ned Pine won't kill him yet.
What makes you so damn sure?
Ned wants me. He knows I'll keep following him until we get to the right place where he thinks he has an advantage over me.
What are you gonna do, Morgan?
I'll stay with him every step of the way. If I get a chance to kill the others, I will.
You're taking a big chance Pine will kill your son, ain't you?
Not if I do it right.
I never met a man who was so dead set on one thing like you are.
You ever have a son?
Oh, yeah. Long time ago. His mother didn't think I was fit to raise him, so she moved off to Baltimore. Never saw the boy again.
Frank stood up behind the pine tree on a ridge above the dry stream where they watched Ned and what was left of his gang pull out.
I had the same problem. Vivian's father split us up before I knew she was pregnant. Conrad and I scarcely know each other. He resents me for not being there when he was younger.
Does he know the whole story?
No.
How come you don't tell him?
I never had the chance. Pine and Van Bergen gangs killed Viv before she could tell Conrad.
Yeah. There's an old mine in town northwest of here. I think it was called Gypsum Gap. That was the town you mentioned.
That boy who rode with Ned told me.
Yeah, I can find it.
I'm staying close to Pine and my son. Wherever they go, that's where I'm going.
God damn, you're hard-headed, cuz.
Maybe I am.
Frank and Tin Pan headed off the ridge to their horses.
Ain't no maybe about it.
Oh, looks like this snow will never let up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That sky's got lead in it. You can count on being chilly for a spell.
Ned was riding out in front with Conrad tied over the saddle of a bay gelding. Lyle and Sloan covered their back trail as they made for Gypsum Gap.
I say we cut and run, Slade. This is personal between Ned and Morgan. I can't see no way either of us is gonna make a dime.
I'm afraid you're right, Lyle. Starved to death waiting for Ned to make up his mind to find a bank or a train we can rob.
This snow will cover us if we decide to leave Ned today.
I'm not worried about Ned.
He's dangerous, Slade. He might decide to come after us if we leave.
I'm not worried. I'll kill the son of a bitch if he tries to stop us.
Well, maybe we ought to just shoot him now. In the back. Get the hell away from here.
It'd be easy.
I can draw a bead on him and blow his guts out the front of his belly right now.
Let's wait. I've had a look at Ned's poke. It's full of gold coins. If we're gonna kill the son of a bitch, we may as well rob him.
He's carrying gold?
Lots of it. I seen it myself back in town when he paid for the whiskey.
How much you figure?
A leather pouch bigger than my fist packed with gold coins and paper money. But he's real careful with it. It was an accident when I saw him draw it out.
He didn't know I was standing behind him looking.
Well, I say we kill him and take the gold.
We've got to choose the right time for it, and just the right place. He's quick with a six-shooter. If he knows what we're about to do, he'll pull iron and we'll be in one hell of a fight.
Well, I know he's good, but he can't be good enough to take both of us.
Slade turned in the saddle. The roadway was still clear behind him.
I'd have said the same thing about this Frank Morgan. Only he's killed off our bunch one or two at a time, and we're in a fix.
You just give the word.
The right time will come.
What's wrong with right now, Slade? I could pull my Winchester and drop him before you can sneeze.
Don't be too damn sure of it.
Are you losing your nerve, Slade? It sure as hell ain't like you.
I'm being smart and careful.
Ned turned his horse up a steep part of the road, Conrad's horse tied to his saddle horn. Lyle glanced backward.
Morgan will hear the shots when we kill Ned. He'll come after us.
All he wants is that crybaby boy of his. You don't know about Ned's goal. If we leave the kid alive, Morgan won't follow us.
It's creepy how one man could kill so many people. Ned keeps saying Morgan is old. He's washed up.
Yeah, he don't seem all that washed up to me.
Slade and Lyle started their horses up the climb.
What he is, he's real damn careful.
Louis Pettigrew saw them a couple of hours after dawn. They were riding behind him on the far side of a yawning, snow-covered valley, a gang of men numbering at least a dozen. They were headed in his direction. He'd heard about outlaw gangs in this part of Colorado territory, and something told him to get away from these men if he could. He heeled the rented horse into a lope.
It could be that gang they told me about at the Wagon Wheel Saloon.
He wasn't thinking about Frank Morgan any longer, or the story he'd come here to write. Just getting out of this part of Colorado territory alive would be enough to satisfy him after finding out the truth regarding Morgan and his overblown reputation. His horse galloped through the snow on an old mining road climbing into snow-clad mountains. He remembered the road from his ride down out of Denver before the late spring snowstorm hit.
Oh, I'm getting too old for this.
He'd been to Africa and South America in search of news his readers wanted, but this trip to the Wild West was an utter waste. Frank Morgan, one of the last living gunfighters, was a myth, a legend in the overactive imaginations of men with nothing else to talk about.
Who the hell is that?
Tin Pan and Frank watched a man in a derby hat riding hard in their direction. He only caught brief glimpses of the rider coming through the snow. It was an odd place to find anyone who was pushing a horse so hard. That spelled trouble in Tin Pan's experience.
I got no idea. Whoever he is, he's in a hurry. Unusual in this weather.
Maybe somebody's after him. Sure does seem like it.
Hard to say.
Frank squinted into the snowfall.
He dressed like a city slicker. Real strange place to find a tin horn, especially when the weather's this bad.
Yeah, and one that's in a hurry. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I'll ride on ahead to keep an eye on Ned Pine and my boy. You stay back and watch this fella. See what he's up to, and if anybody's after him, maybe he's being followed. That would explain why he's riding so fast. There could be somebody behind him.
Martha would tell me. He rides by this knob and she keeps looking southwest. I'll know there's somebody on his trail.
I never met a man who put so much trust in a mule.
Tin Pan gave him a sideways look.
You'll learn one of these days, son, if you stay alive long enough. A mule has got better instincts than any dog or any man. Better senses, too. If you aim to stay in this high country, you'll get yourself a good mountain mule.
Frank was still grinning when he rode off to the north behind Ned, Conrad, and the two remaining gunmen with Ned now. Tin Pan stepped out from behind a tree with his rifle aimed at the man in the bowler.
Hold it right there, mister!
The man jerked his winded horse to a halt and threw his hands in the air.
If you intend to rob me, sir, you'll be sorely disappointed. I'm not carrying any large amount of money, just a few dollars.
I ain't no highwayman. You're gonna kill that horse if you keep running him through these snowdrifts. All right, you can lower them hands now.
The stranger let his palms drop to the top of his saddle horn, though he did it slowly.
Now speak up!
Tin Pan held his rifle at the ready.
There's an outlaw gang behind me. It may be a man by the name of Ned Pine.
There are at least a dozen of them. They're following me. At least, that's the way it appears. I was told of several outlaw gangs roaming about in this area, to be very careful to avoid them.
Ned Pine ain't following you. He's in front of you. And my partner Frank is trailing him into these here mountains.
Could that be Frank Morgan?
Maybe. What business is it of yours? How come you know that name?
I came out west, out here from Boston, to write a story about him. He was a gunfighter.
Yeah, he could be called that.
Only I found out he's a fraud. There is no story to write about him. I met some gentlemen in Cortez who know him. They told me all about him. He shoots his victims in the back or murders them in their sleep. He isn't a real shootist at all.
Oh, shit! Who told you that, mister?
Lewis glanced behind him before he spoke again.
One was named Ford Peters. Mr. Peters knew Morgan from years back. Then another gentleman by the name of Vic Van Bergen told me the rest of the story. About how sneaky Frank Morgan was. He was a coward.
Damn.
What's so funny?
Oh, you got several things mighty wrong. First off, Frank Morgan may be the quickest draw with a handgun this side of the whole Mississippi River.
I was told otherwise.
Yeah, well, you got bad information. But when you listen to Victor Van Bergen, you were hearing from one of the leaders of the outlaw gangs you're so worried about. Him and old Ned Pine has robbed banks and trains all over the place. I don't know him personal, just by reputation. But he's a no-good cutthroat and a robber by profession. If you met him, you're lucky he didn't rob you.
I didn't know that...
Well, now you do.
I'd heard from various lawmen that Frank Morgan was a real gunfighter, perhaps one of the last of his breed. My name is Lewis Pettigrew. I'm with the Boston Globe, and my readers are hungry for stories about real-life gunmen. But those men told me Morgan was a fake, that he wasn't a real gunfighter at all in the true sense of the word. They described him as a common murderer.
Morgan's a real thing. You can print that if you take the notion. He's killed 8 or 9 of Ned Pine's outlaws, and before it's all over, he'll kill the rest of them, and most likely Ned Pine himself.
Pettigrew glanced over his shoulder.
My God. The men I was talking to last night are outlaws and robbers?
Now you're getting a picture. Like I said, you're lucky you wasn't robbed yourself.
Would Mr. Morgan grant me an interview so I can present his story to my readers?
Oh, I can't say for sure. One thing you can't count on, he ain't talking to nobody until he gets his son back.
His son?
And Ned Pine is holding his boy for ransom. Morgan's after Ned to save his boy's life. He ain't just some cold-blooded killer.
Darker clouds scudded over the knob where Tin Pan was talking with Lewis Pettigrew. The snowflakes grew thicker on gusts of wind.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Morgan. I'd like to tell our readers his side of the story.
Yeah, well, you're gonna have to wait until his business with Ned Pine is settled. That's for sure.
May I ride along with you in order to meet him?
Yeah, maybe. If you can keep quiet, I won't guarantee Morgan to talk to you.
I'll take that chance.
Tin Pan lowered the muzzle of his sharps.
My name's Tin Pan. Clarence Rushing was what I was called back when I was a sight younger.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Rushing, or Mr. Tin Pan.
Ah, Tin Pan is what they call me. I used to pan for gold in these mountains.
Did you find any?
Not a single flake of placer. I trap furs now. Pays better. Ride that horse over this hill. I'll fetch my mule and the borrowed horse. We'll catch up to Morgan in a couple of hours, maybe less.
What about those men behind me?
Morgan will take care of Van Bergen and his gang just like he did the bunch with Ned Pine. You got a chance to give your readers back in Boston a first-hand account of how a gunfighter goes about his profession. If things go like I figure they will.
Ford Peters turned to Vern.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever done. We ain't robbing nobody. We're following Big Bank to give some gab so we can freeze our asses off while Ned Pine gets his revenge against his Frank Morgan.
But damn sure ain't making no money.
The two brought up the rear of Van Bergen's gang.
I say we light a suck out of here and go back to Texas.
Vic will send the rest of the boys after us if we run out on them. They'll hunt us down.
If this snow gets any heavier, nobody will know we're gone until we've got a few hours lead time. We can make it if we push our horses.
It's taking a hell of a chance.
We take chances every time we rob a bank or hold up a train. We could get our heads blown off riding with Van Bergen.
But we've got a chance to make some money while we take those chances.
We damn sure ain't got that chance here.
First chance we get, let's ride back.
It makes sense.
It's snow's starting to fall heavier. It'll make it easy for us to get away.
Vern pulled his bandana higher on his face to warm his nose and mouth.
I'm with you, Ford. Whenever you decide to light out of here, we'll ride like hell back to the south.
Just give this snow a few more minutes. Hell, Vic won't know we're gone until we're halfway back to Cortez if this snow gets any worse.
And maybe we hadn't ought to use this road.
They rounded a stand of trees.
Only way to make good time. We spur these broncs until their flanks are bloody. We can steal fresh horses back in Cortez and make for the Texas Panhandle. Or head for the New Mexico Territory line.
Shoot the hell out of me. I've never been so goddamn cold in my life. As far as I can tell, we're doing this for nothing.
Oh, you got that right. I'm flat busted. And Vic ain't showed no signs of wanting to fill my pockets with a share of any bank loot.
Let's pick our spot and disappear. I'll bet Alan Todd'll go with us.
Ford nodded.
Right up there and talk to him. Be sure you pull him off to one side. If Vic finds out what we're planning to do, he'll start shooting at us. Some of the others will side with him, too.
Vern urged his horse up to the rear of the bunch and motioned Al, then Todd, off the trail. The others didn't seem to pay any attention to what Vern was doing. The three men held a short conversation. Then Vern trotted his horse back to Ford.
They're ready to pull stakes whenever we are.
Now's as good a time as any.
Four riders peeled away from the rear of Victor Van Bergen's gang. They struck a lope toward the south, glancing over their shoulders until they were half a mile away.
We've done it. Vic won't send anybody after us now. And by the time he notices we're gone, this snow will have covered our tracks.
2 hours of following Ned and his men through dense forests along a winding road put an edge on Frank's nerves. The pair of gunmen at the rear were now about 100 yards back. They seemed to be talking softly to each other. Frank wondered about them. Why they were dropping farther back? Were they planning to run out on Ned?
Time I made my move.
Frank tied off his horses in a pine grove. On foot, he approached a turn in the road where the two outlaws would be out of Ned's line of vision for a short time. Frank was taking a huge risk. Gunshots might force Ned to shoot Conrad. But the boy was lashed over his saddle and by all appearances unconscious, perhaps even dead. It was a gamble worth taking. Frank slipped up to a thick ponderosa trunk where the road made a bend. He opened his coat and swept his coattails behind the butts of his twin peacemakers. When the distance was right, he stepped out from behind the tree to face the gunman.
Howdy, boys.
Frank braced himself for what he knew would follow.
You got two choices. Toss your guns down and ride back wherever you came from, or go for those pistols. It don't make a damn bit of difference to me either way. I'd just as soon kill you as allow you to ride off.
Morgan!
You got my name right.
Before another word was said, the second outlaw clawed for his six-shooter. The man was knocked backward out of his saddle when his horse spooked at the sound of gunfire, tossing its rider over the cantle of his saddle into the snow as the sorrel gelding ran off into the trees. But it was the second man Frank was aiming at now as the fool made his own play. Frank fired a second shot. His bullet struck the outlaw in the head, twisting it sideways on his neck as he slumped over his horse's withers. When the bay wheeled to get away from the loud noise, the gunman toppled to the ground. The bay galloped off, trailing its reins. Frank walked over to both men. One was dead, the other was dying. With no time to waste, Frank took off at a run to collect his horse and go after Ned Pine. All that mattered now was saving Conrad's life, if the boy wasn't already dead. Pine heard Frank's horse galloping toward him from the rear. He looked over his shoulder, reaching inside his coat for his pistol. Frank had to make a dangerous shot at long range before Ned put a bullet in Conrad. Frank aimed and fired, knowing it would take a stroke of luck to hit Pine. But the fates were with Frank. Conrad's horse shied away, breaking its reins and dashing off into the trees with the boy roped to the seat of its saddle.
Damn you to hell!
Frank knew he missed Pine, even though the bullet was close. Pine spurred his horse, firing 3 shots over his shoulder as he galloped off in another direction, continuing northward. The son of a bitch might get away, but Conrad was more important than chasing human trash. There would be plenty of time for that after Frank got Conrad to safety.
You're in my book, Pine.
He reined into the trees to follow Conrad's horse. Moments later, he found his son. Jumping down from the saddle, he ran over to him.
You okay, Conrad?
Conrad blinked.
My head hurts. One of them hit me.
Then he gave Frank a cold stare.
What are you doing here? Why did you come?
I came to get you back.
Frank began unfastening the lariat rope holding Conrad across the saddle. He pulled out his knife and cut the ropes binding Conrad's wrists and ankles. Conrad slid to the ground on uncertain legs, requiring a moment to gain his balance.
Thank you. Thank you for finally being here when I needed you. Or are you just here to add to your reputation? Is that why you were never there when I was growing up, Frank Morgan? Your reputation? I wish the hell you'd never come here.
It was your grandfather, Browning. I was framed for something I didn't do.
No, Morgan. Don't try to defame him. Now he's dead and can't defend himself.
Conrad rubbed his sore wrists.
You may have saved my life for whatever reason. I guess I have to thank you for that. But I don't ever want to see you again. You mean nothing to me.
Frank's heart sank. At the sound of horses coming down a hill above the road, Frank reached for his pistol.
Oh, Capitan Morgan!
It was Tin Pan and his mule, although someone else, the man they'd seen earlier in the derby hat, was riding with him. Tin Pan and the stranger rode up.
Nice shooting, Morgan. We saw it from up a slope when you gunned down those two toughs. I couldn't get down in time to help you, although it didn't appear you needed any help anyways.
I saw the whole thing. You're every bit as fast as I remember. You killed two men, and you made it look easy.
Tin Pan gave Conrad a looking over before he spoke.
This here's Mr. Louis Pettigrew from the Boston Globe, Morgan. He came all the way to Colorado Territory to get an interview with you.
We met. You picked a hell of a bad time, Mr. Pettigrew. Right now, I'm taking my son back to Durango. He's been through a rough time, and we may need to see a doctor. He has a gash on top of his head.
Don't ever call me your son again, Frank Morgan. You never were a father to me.
Suit yourself, Conrad. Maybe after you think about it, we can talk about what happened back when you were born.
I'd rather not hear it. You weren't there when I needed you. That's all that mattered to me. Or my late mother.
Tin Pan gave Frank a piercing stare.
Sounds like you should have left this ungrateful boy tied to his horse while Ned Pine took him to Gypsum Gap.
Frank didn't care to talk about it with a stranger.
What about Vic Van Bergen and his bunch? Have you seen any sign of them on this road?
Yeah, sure did. Only some of them turned back and took off at a high lope. He ain't got but maybe half a dozen men with him now. I would have run into him on the trail back south. There could be trouble.
I can handle trouble.
Frank stalked off to get his saddle horse and pack horse with Conrad's harsh words still ringing in his ears.
What a story this will make!
Frank ignored the newsman's remark. He knew there was a different story to tell, in detail, to his son. Conrad didn't know the truth about why Frank left his beloved Vivian. Frank mounted up and rode back to the trail. Conrad was still struggling to mount the outlaw's horse.
Let's head southwest. I'll ride out front to be sure this road's clear.
We'll be right behind you.
Conrad Browning did not say another word as they left the scene of his rescue. Seven mounted men were crossing a creek at the bottom of a draw when Frank, Tin Pan, Pettigrew, and Conrad came to the crest of a rise.
That's Van Bergen. He's the one who told me all those false tales about you.
Frank stepped off his horse with his Winchester 44-40, levering a shell into the firing chamber.
I'll warm them up a little bit. You boys pull back behind this ridge. I'm gonna pump some lead at them.
The one in the gray hat is Van Bergen.
I know Victor Van Bergen.
Frank aimed for Van Bergen as his horse plunged across the shallow stream.
Good to see you again, Vic.
Van Bergen's body jerked. He bent forward and grabbed his belly. Before Frank could draw another careful bead on him, he spurred his horse into some trees on the east bank of the creek. The other gunmen wheeled their horses in all directions and took off at a hard run. One rider fired a harmless shot over his shoulder before he went out of sight on the far side of a hill.
Got him.
Frank searched the trees for Van Bergen as gun smoke cleared away from his rifle. To his regret, he saw Van Bergen galloping his horse over a tree-studded ridge, aiming due north. Seconds later, he was out of sight.
You're in the other page of my book, Vic. I'll find you and Ned once I get my boy to a doctor.
He strode back over the ridge and swung up in the saddle, booting his rifle.
Did you get any of them?
I shot Van Bergen in the belly. If Lady Luck is with me, he's gut shot and he'll bleed to death. If he's still alive, I'll find him and settle this score for good.
Grandfather was right. You're nothing but a killer.
There were circumstances back then. But if you give me the chance, I'll tell you about them.
I don't want to hear them. All I want is you to leave me alone.
It stung deep, but Frank let the remark ride. The kid couldn't know what Frank or Vivian went through before he was born, or what his grandfather did to Frank. A time might come when Frank would get the chance to tell his side of the story. In the meantime, he'd take the boy back to Durango and let a doctor check him over. There was other unfinished business to attend to when he got back. The thought of it brought a slight smile to his rugged face. Wolf would be waiting for him, and Jeff. Frank had a future if he made the most of it. He only hoped one of these days Conrad would be part of it. At least listen to his side of the story.
I hope this time you'll grant me the time for an interview.
We'll see. Depends.
Doc Green finished putting the last stitch in Conrad's head and put his needle and sutures away.
It'll take a while to heal up right, but you'll mend. Take a swallow of that laudanum when your head hurts.
Conrad nodded, stepping off the table in the doctor's office before giving Frank a look.
Sorry this happened, Conrad. Ned Pine and Vic Van Bergen were out to get me. Wish you hadn't been the one to suffer for it.
They walked out on the doctor's front porch before Conrad said a word.
I'm grateful for what you did, Frank. But that won't make up for the years you weren't there for me and my mother.
Frank stared down at his boots.
I take it Vivian didn't tell you the whole story.
The whole story? What else is there to say? You left us alone. You left her to raise me by herself.
That isn't quite how it happened. I can prove it if you just listen to me.
I don't want to hear what you have to say. Just leave me alone. You're nothing but a killer, a paid assassin. Grandpa told me that much.
Frank let his gaze wander across the rooftops of Durango for a spell.
It's true. I killed a few men. I'm not proud of it. But I didn't leave you and your mother because I wanted to. I didn't have a choice. I was framed for a crime I didn't commit. I didn't have a choice but to leave. I regret it every day of my life. It's the truth. If you'll allow it, I'll tell you about it. Then you can make up your own mind about who's telling the truth.
Mother would have told me.
There were things she probably thought she couldn't tell you. All I want is a chance to tell you the truth. Your grandfather hated me. He put me on the run. There was no way to prove I was innocent.
Just leave me alone, Frank. And don't ever call me your son again.
All I want to do is to tell you what happened. I don't see how that's asking too much.
Conrad turned to head down the boardwalk. Then he stopped.
Maybe I owe you that much.
That's all I'm asking.
We'll see. I suppose I should be grateful you got me away from Ned Pine and his hoodlums. I guess I am. But, Frank Morgan, my mother and I spent our lives knowing you abandoned us. I'm not ready for some fairy tale of how it wasn't so.
Frank went down the steps to his horse.
I understand.
He mounted his horse as Conrad marched away. Frank sat leaden in the saddle. He watched Conrad stride down the boardwalk. If the boy only knew the whole truth, he might take a different view of things.
He just might.
He swung his horse away from the hitch rail, heading out to see about Wolf and Jeff. He needed to make plans. Just once, he looked up at the mountains, where he tangled with Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen.
I'll be back up there. Things won't go so easy on either one of you.
Frank led his pack horse down the street, but he drew up short when Louis Pettigrew came off the steps of the hotel.
Mr. Morgan! Mr. Morgan! I was hoping you'd have time to talk to me.
Not now. I got some things weighing heavy on my mind.
Would tomorrow be all right?
A day or two. Right now, I got a dog to check on and a young friend waiting for me.
Just remember, I would very much like to give my readers the true story of Frank Morgan, the gunfighter.
I'm not a gunfighter anymore.
Here!
I'm just a man who's trying to live peaceful. If folks will let me.
The Last Gunfighter Number 2, Reprisal, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2000, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Peter Stray, Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, James Lewis, Rick Rowan, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, M.B. Van Dorn, Nanette Savard, Johann Detweiler, and Kate Torrey. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna and Nathaniel Perry. Original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Title theme by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the First Mountain Man series, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
We must reach the church before the ceremony is done, and it has recruited another soldier to his army of the plague.
Plague?
Okashnik bring disease. He bring plague. He bring the Black Death. Only those who bear his mark are immune to it. They are his beasts.
The bayous of Louisiana, steeped in magic and the supernatural, are the new epicenter of a dark, age-old evil. Here, the horrors of a long-lost world are being resurrected into a living nightmare, unleashing a pestilence that may destroy hybrid and human alike.
A virulent disease is sweeping through my territories. If it spreads outward with our diminished autoimmune systems and this treatment facility in ruins, the Nine Barons will perish. We of the hybrid dynasty are doomed if we do not seek outside aid. If necessary, we must circumvent the oligarchy altogether and find other allies.
It's the Black Death. Sure enough.
You've got the plague.
All of us have it. But it won't kill us.
Why not?
Ukashnik kissed us. Immunized us.
You want to explain me? Is that it? And therefore diminish what I am? Or what you fear me to be?
And what is that?
A vampire.
He is Ukashnik, a creature who has never died. He woos all the darkness within the human soul like a lover. He is the king of the shadowy hordes that revel among the tombs of the ancient dead when night veils the swamps and the rats crawl among the offal. Those he kisses live forevermore in the darkness of the spirit.
Kiss me and live forever.
Cain, Grant, and Bridget Baptiste join with a voodoo priestess to battle primordial fear and destroy one of the most ancient of evils in Outlanders number 13, Shadow Scourge. Now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, Download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.